Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm super excited to dive into this episode with you. Before we get started, there's one thing that I always get questions on is what kind of hydration gear do I need to run an ultra? Do I need soft flasks? Do I need handhelds? Do I need bladders? I always say it depends on the race that you're running. If you're running a really fast race, then I would wear a handheld. If you are running a really long race or a race where you're going to go a little slower, then using a bladder or soft flasks with a pack is going to be the way to go. But regardless of which hydration apparatus you're using in your training or your racing, there is one brand of hydration equipment that I've been using in my training extensively when it comes to handhelds and soft flasks and bladders that has just been so, so awesome and very, very reliable. Because here's the reality. I've tried many hydration products and sometimes they break, they leak, they're not great out there, and I've never had any of the problems with the products from Hydropack. Now, Hydropack is a company that designs handhelds, bladders, soft flasks, you name it when it comes to hydration things. They even have one of my favorite handhelds because they have one that actually straps to your hand without you needing to grip it. It's their new Sky Flask and it is absolutely incredible. And they also have the best soft flasks in the game. If you've ever used Salomon's running vest and the soft flasks that come with that vest, that's actually created by Hydropack, and they make their own soft flasks as well, which can fit into any type of pack that you are using. So if you're using a Nathan pack or if you're using a Salomon pack, they're going to be able to fit into there as well. So they're very versatile, and the bladder is the same way as well. These products, they don't leak, they're very reliable, they're durable, and they are also super, super comfortable to hold in your hand if you're using the handheld, and also they're very light and they don't slosh around as much as any other products as well. So when it comes to hydration equipment, Hydropack is the go-to. Plus, they even have filters too. So for if you're on a long hiking trip or maybe on a long run where you're going to need to filter water, they have a filter where you can actually screw it on to your soft flask or your handheld, scoop up some water, and drink directly out of there, and it will filter all the bad stuff out of there so you can have reliable water. So as you can see, the products by Hydropack are so amazing. And because they are so amazing, I want to give you a 20% discount off of any of Hydropack's products by using the code EverydayUltra20 by going to the link in the show notes, or you can go directly to hydropack.com, which is HYDRAPAK.com, and use code EverydayUltra20 at checkout for 20% off your order. And that's on anything, soft flasks, handhelds, bladders, you name it, you got it on there. So that's Everyday Ultra 20 at checkout for 20% off your order at hydropack.com. You can use the link in the show notes or go to hydropack.com to get your discount. All right, everybody, that's it. Thank you so much for listening, and let's get into the episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm just super pumped for this episode because I've been following this guy, his break into the trail world, his massive break into the trail world over the past few years. And he has been racking up podium after podium, win after win. Most recently, pretty much in back-to-back efforts, the Big Alta 50K came in first place, and then the Black Canyon 60K as well, smashing the course record out there, which with a speedy 4:06 as well. And he's also been at the podium and gotten many wins at other premier races such as the Kodiak 50K, also have Pikes Peak Ascent, Broken Arrow 23K, and the list goes on and on and on. And what's super cool is he comes from a professional triathlete background, which is just super, super awesome to hear. So we'll dive a little bit into that too. And as you know, as I was mentioning before, some of his results really making a name in the sub ultra and then recently moving into a little bit of the ultra distance as well. So we'll talk about that as well. He's also an endurance coach. He helps people become aerobic monsters, which is so cool. Like, what a name. Like, that is just awesome. So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. But nonetheless, I can make this intro literally so long, but we'd love to hear from the man himself, the guest, Eli Hemming, to the Everyday Ultra Podcast. Eli, thanks so much for coming on, and congrats on your back-to-back wins recently.
Thank you so much. That was one hell of an intro.
Dude, and I feel
Appreciate
like
that.
as you're getting into trail running, like that intro is going to get just longer and longer because you're just racking up the results, which has just been so awesome to see.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. And where I kind of want to start this is, you know, I was listening to your podcast interview that you did with Debo last year. And one thing that like really like just hit me when you were talking about just kind of like your journey from like triathlon to trail running is that you have this very big philosophy on just like creating a fulfilling life. And I think that's just so cool. So talk to me a little bit about like that philosophy and how it plays into trail running and how it even plays into outside of trail running. Like talk to me about like that approach to life. Cause I think that was such a refreshing thing to hear you say. And I'd love to hear you kind of speak a little bit more about that.
Yeah, man. I honestly, like we just are not on this world for that long. There's no use in doing something. Even if you happen to be pretty good at it, there's not use. If you're not enjoying it, if you're not getting fulfillment out of it, it's not really worth doing. So I kind of found in triathlon, like, yes, I was succeeding. I was doing quite well. I was racing super well. I was training a ton and I do love training, but I was training at the level that I couldn't do anything else. And I found that myself just kind of, I felt like I was living a very selfish lifestyle and that really wasn't very fulfilling. I couldn't pursue my relationships, my family, my just my other interests. So I kind of stepped away a little bit and found trail running with my wife. And that's where we kind of found that fulfillment of, I can't run for 30 hours a week. I would break myself instantly. So time is spent sitting on the couch and I can focus on like, okay, what am I doing with my life? Whereas like we live, me and my wife now live on her fifth generation cattle ranch. I get to call myself a cowboy. I'm technically a cowboy. I'm a coach. I get to spend every day, all day with my wife. I get to see my family more often. I think the first year that I was racing triathlon, I spent 2 weeks with my family. Yeah. So long story short, it's just something that I don't think that we have enough time on this world to not be living a really enjoyable, really fulfilling life. So even if you're succeeding at something, you don't have to stick with that.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I have so much respect for that. And I love that so much just because, I mean, you're like out there, not even just talking about it, you're doing it, right? Cause you were very successful in triathlon. It was something that was a huge part of your life. And, you know, I know you mentioned on like Debo's podcast, it was a difficult decision to make and it was a tough transition, but you kind of went through it. But I love how you made that trade-off for fulfillment. Like no matter kind of how uncomfortable it gets, kind of like on that thread a little bit more too, like how does that kind of play into like your, I don't want to say day-to-day life, but maybe when you're looking at like a year, even like into the trail running sport, is this something like that you take with intention where, you know, you kind of set, you know, kind of what is fulfilling to you and you pursue it? Like, how do you, I guess, approach that with your life, whether it is in trail running or just kind of like life in general? Like, how do you always make sure that you're kind of making, you know, sure your actions are leading to that path of fulfillment for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't have it all figured out. I am slowly trying to figure that out as well as I can. And a lot of it is just me and my wife talking. Like a lot of times it's like we are out in the mountains in the middle of nowhere and we're saying like, where is it that we want to be and where, like, what would make us the happiest? And so like we've made moves like moving up to the ranch, moving from sports. Like she was a track athlete, I was a triathlete. We'd completely upended our lives and moved to that. And so I think it's just kind of something that we've followed through with. Like, there's nothing that we have to do. We want a fulfilling and happy life. Let's seek that out. I wouldn't say necessarily it's my first thought at waking up in the morning, but it is, luckily, like with trail running, you have so much time for introspection that it can always fall back on, wow, am I doing the thing that I want to do? And I think that I've really found that spot where I want to be right now.
That's so awesome, man. Congrats on that. That's like amazing. And I think it's just so awesome. Like, even if it's not like a daily thing, just like, even just to have it like in the forefront of your mind is such an important thing because, you know, like you said, like life is short, but I know even for me, like speaking about like my current past background and things like that, like it can be I know like a younger me was kind of not even thinking about that question. You kind of just do the things, do the motions. You kind of continue to do the stuff that like people say you're good at or like you're good at and stuff. And like, and it's kind of having that realization, like you mentioned before, saying like, wait, is this really like filling up my cup? Is it really like getting all the areas of my life? And so it's awesome that you're thinking those things. And like, so when you're on the trails, like does some of these like realization just come in? You were kind of mentioning that, like, is it more just, you know, just like, do you listen to music out there? Do you just kind of like, is it intentional kind of like reflection time? Does it just kind of come out of nowhere? Like talk to me a little bit about that introspection on the trail.
Honestly, I think it just comes a little bit out of nowhere. We spend so much time in the quiet. When I'm out in the mountains, I don't really like to listen to music. Music is left for the treadmill. So it makes the treadmill time a little bit easier because I do spend quite a bit of time on the treadmill, especially with where we live now. But I think it just kind of happens naturally. Even just like say how we moved up into the mountains of Colorado, we were living happily in just outside of Boulder. It was a great place. I stand by that. Boulder is one of the best town or best cities in the world. I can't find anywhere much better, but it wasn't quite right. And mm-hmm. we kept just trying to escape. And so we would come stay at Tabor's parents' house, like all the time. And we were just escaping as much as we could. And we're like, okay, wow. Why are we trying to escape this place that we were so happy? Like we thought we were going to be so happy in. And it was like, are we really happy here? And so we kind of like, oh, wow, that maybe that wasn't the perfect spot for us. And so we sold the place, moved up to the mountains, and we're here now.
Dude, that's awesome. And yeah, like, I mean, like in Boulder, like you said, it's like, I mean, it's a great city. It's like super awesome. It's known as like one of the, if not the training meccas, like of like the, you know, the whole like trail running world. And to have that decision to be like, you know, this isn't where, you know, we're the most fulfilled or most happy. And it's like, what can we do to get there? I think that's awesome, man. So it's super cool to see that. And I love that the music's for the treadmill. Like, and I agree, like, I feel like it's almost an essential on the treadmill for sure. At least for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, that's awesome. And speaking a little bit, I know like this kind of started from like the conversation from like triathlon to, you know, trail running and stuff like that. I'm curious because, you know, we're seeing like other triathletes starting to get into, you know, the world, like notably Heather Jackson as well. And like other athletes kind of like making it in, and you're super successful. Heather's been like super successful. And I always like to hear from like people with the triathlon background. Is there anything in that specific background that has pulled you like into success that you have felt like you've taken from that world into trail running that you feel like has been an asset of being in, you know, that multi-sport discipline that you were in before trail running?
Yeah, I'd say triathlon gets you very, very, very aerobically fit. Like that, mm-hmm. To be successful as a triathlete, you have to be one of the fittest people in the world. And so that's why I was training 30 to 35 hours a week when I was a triathlete. And so I think coming into trail running, I just had that huge, huge base that it was just kind of like, okay, I can kind of fudge my way through, trying to learn how to trail run, like learn the skills and technical stuff that goes along with it because I was awkwardly fit.
Yeah, 100%. And I've always said like triathletes are like, and it seems like you agree too. Triathletes are like some of the fittest people like on the planet. Like seeing like, you know, some of these guys out there in like Ironman distance running like 5:30 splits on a marathon after like crushing 112. It's nuts. I mean, even just your performances too. I mean, it's off the charts, like the aerobic fitness that is required to be in these sports, which is cool. When you're making that transition to like trail initially, like what are some things that like you did to kind of help with a little bit more of that trail specificity? And I ask this question for like anyone who's maybe, you know, thinking of going from whether it is triathlon to trail or maybe even rode the trail, because like there are like those subtle differences. Like for you, like what were the things that you specifically like worked on to help to get to there? Because you're not only doing these trail races, you're doing it at a very like high performance, which is cool. So like what was that kind of process like, and what are some skills that you really like look to develop?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I would say my approach was a little aggressive. And so kind of the way I've always looked at sports is like, if I want to pursue everything with excellence, if I want to pursue sports with excellence, what are the demands of competition and how do I meet those? And in trail running, who knows what the demands of competition are? So it like you can't just say like, okay, if you want to run a marathon, say, and you want to run 220, you got to be really good at running like 520 something miles. Like it's a simple concept. Get really good at running those. Like that's fine. But trail running, you're like, okay, there's so many little things that go into it. You can go for the fitness side, you can go for speed, you can do all this. So I kind of just threw myself, me and my wife just threw ourselves into every big race we could find and tried to run with the fastest people we could run with to see like what the best in the world are doing. We did come with a good set of skills from our other sports. So we were, I think we were advantaged that we could see what the best in the world were doing. And I think it was why I got second place at so many races, is because I was trying. And once the going got actually tough, like I'd be running with that person. And once the going got actually tough, their skills showed that, okay, yeah, they're heads and shoulders above me when it comes to that. So really my biggest thing that I learned was the technical side of stuff. You have to learn how to read a trail, how to run quickly over rocks, over roots, all of the little intricacies that go with that, and not wasting too much energy doing so. I was the guy that was yo-yoing off and say like one person was running at the front, and I would run with them during the easy parts on the hills. I was good, and then it would come to downhills, and I would have to catch back up right after every single downhill, and it was just wasting energy. So I kind of threw myself in the deep end there to intentionally get my teeth kicked in.
Yeah, oh, I love that answer. I think that, and I love that approach. I think it's so cool that like you were like, hey, like I'm just gonna go in there and just see what other people doing. What are some things that like you picked up on, or like was it more of the, I'm sure it was a combination of both, but I'm curious, like what are some things that you picked on just from like observing like the people who, you know, you're racing against, and like two, like was it more just kind of like exposure therapy too, where, you know, you just, the more you kind of do it, the more comfortable you get it. Like, what was the combination of just like picking up pieces and then more like the comfortability? Like, I'm curious. And even like, I mean, you're a coach too, you work with athletes. So also curious, like, you know, that approach that you maybe like get with athletes too on that level.
Yeah, I think most of it is time spent, honestly. There's no better way to get to where you want to be than spending some time doing it. Trail skill comes with running on trails. So I was trying to learn how to do that very quickly, and so I was signing up for a ton and ton of races, because that was my best place to learn how to trail run, because it was me and my wife living together. And we didn't know like what exactly we were doing. So I think the best place, at least for me, to learn how to run that quickly over stuff was in races. And yeah, it all goes back for me to like the biggest thing that I needed was to learn how the skills that come with trail running. And just watching coming in as a triathlete into trail running, it is phenomenal. And just obnoxious how fast people can run over rocks.
Well, dude, I mean, I was saying the same thing about you at Black Canyon 60K, because like some of those sections are a little chunky and you're out there ripping, which is just like awesome to see.
Oh, go try to race a golden trail race. It's terrifying.
Oh my gosh. But I love what you mentioned, like, you know, the time just spent out there and like signing up for the races and putting yourself out there is like helped too. Yeah, and I hope those golden trail races are just like just gnarly out there with some of the rocks that are there, which is a super good way to really throw yourself into the fire too. And you know, you mentioned like, you know, you kept getting, you know, into like second place, just kind of being behind the people. And then like, you know, you start to see some of your results like Breakneck, Broken Arrow, first place, even most recently back-to-back wins at Black Canyon and like Big Alta. Like, was that really like the big nut to crack? Was that technicality and stuff like that? Or were there other kind of skills that maybe, you know, had helped to get to those victories? Because too, like, I mean, Black Canyon, you're going up against some seasoned trail runners, Brett Hornig, Michael Versteeg, just to name like a few out of the many that are at those kind of races that, you know, you're kind of going against. Even Big Alta had some like pretty big names in there as well. You know, Matt Daniels, like to name one just off the top of the head. So what were maybe some other skills, like other than the technical stuff, that you think really helped you to, you know, not only improve but win these races?
Right. I mean, honestly, one of the biggest things for me was learning how to eat while running. Nutrition was such a big thing. It is such a big thing in trail running. in these longer races, especially like these last two races have been right around 4 hours for me. And you can't really fudge that. In triathlon, like my longest race was 2 hours long. So like pretty much you toss a gel in on the bike and you're good to go for the rest of the time. You don't have to eat, you don't have to eat and everything on the run. Like it's probably recommended that you have a little bit more than that, but I did get away with that for years, before like the whole high carb fad came in. Not fad, but like that whole realization that carbs are necessary. But you can get away with a terrible amount in 2 hours. But as soon as that 3 hour mark comes around, it'll kick you in the pants.
Yeah. And like, that's like, I feel like the big thing with like ultra marathons, it's just like the fueling is like nuts for sure. What was like your fueling strategy at Black Canyon and Big Alta? I mean, these are like, you know, starting to make the foray into like the first ultras, and, correct me if I'm wrong, but Kodiak, was that your first like ultra?
No. So I did Way Too Cool 50K.
Oh, Way Too Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So that was, oh yeah, that was 2022. Like when, how is like your like fueling strategy like evolved over time, and what does it look like over the last like two, like I made the mistake too, like I come from triathlon background as well, a little bit longer distance, and even like, you know, a little bit of a very sub ultra background. I remember the first few ultras that I did, it was just a nightmare with the fueling. I'm sure you probably had a better grip than I did, but curious to hear how that's kind of evolved over time. Shaking your head
no. No, I actually had quite the experience at that first one, that at Way Too Cool. I had a few gels and stuff with me, but I didn't really like think a whole lot into it. Tabor and I just kind of showed up to the race, and I got just chatting away, having a grand old time up at the front with a couple different guys. And then 17 miles hit, and I realized I hadn't eaten anything.
Oh, for 17 like, miles. Oh, no.
Ooh, yeah. And so I was still feeling good at that point. I was like, okay, I'll just start taking things now and it'll be fine. Got up to a marathon. I was like, yes, I'm doing great. Like I might be good at this sport. And then just the walls started closing in. I started like blacking out. Like I was just started walking. It was the biggest bonk of my life. So I would say I'm doing better now.
You still got second place too. I'm looking right now. You still got second place in that race. So.
Yeah. No, I had a great first marathon. it was just after that, it was quite bad.
Oh man.
No, I've learned a lot, and that's kind of the way I have to learn sometimes is, to learn the hard way. So I've been, focusing on that quite a bit now. I did two different things at Black Canyon and Big Alta, just trying different things. I think I'd like to really do well at this distance. And I think it's something that like fits my physiology really well. And so I want to, my big goal this year is OCC. So I'd like to go there with a big presence. So I'm trying some different things. I would say that at Black Canyon, I did much better. I was doing liquid nutrition. I did 400 calorie in each bottle. And so I took I took down four bottles. I took down a bottle an hour. So 100 grams of carb an hour, which was awesome. Didn't have any problems with that. But then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try something different for Big Alta, see if that works. And I had I had hyper-concentrated scratch super fuel. And put it into a 250 ml bottle, and it's actually really nice. Like I would highly suggest trying it if you like scratch, because it's not really overly sweet or anything. I kind of appreciate the clusterdextrin approach over maltodextrin, but I guess I don't really know. I'm not smart enough to know the scientific what actually is better.
Me too.
But I had hyper concentrated this. In a 250 ml bottle, I had 800 calories. And I was planning on taking that over 2 hours. And the nozzle that I was using on the bottle it did not have a high enough flow rate. So I was like trying to suck it out of the bottle, which just meant I got frustrated with it and just like stopped taking calories at some point. And I did not have enough calories at Big Alta I was very happy that the finish was where it was, not any further.
Oh man. So was it, you were trying to make kind of like a gel, like almost like, was that like,
yeah, kind it, of it like is a gel. Theory? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Cause that is like, it's the 7 scoops per like the usually water, but then you're making some really constant, that actually sounds like a pretty good approach though. Like, I mean, it just sounds like a bottle thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is. I think I do want to try it again. I don't know if I'm going to try it again. I definitely need a different nozzle for it. but I don't know when I'm going to try it again. I'll probably try it in practice versus at a race next time.
Yeah. Oh man, that's cool. I'm actually like interested in potentially trying that too, because I think that'd be a pretty interesting option too. And then how do you balance that with like the hydration? Like, I mean, have you dialed that in? I mean, obviously, like, and I'm curious to hear even just from like this, like the, you know, triathlon world that you're in, and even just like some of the shorter distance, like how that kind of played in. How do you think about like the hydration, like amidst the nutrition as well?
Yeah. So that's kind of why the hydration, like, was why I was trying the hyper concentration versus the just liquid nutrition, because I do enjoy just having just water. Yeah. And so it was kind of nice having a gel and a water, but I don't like having, I hate single use plastic. So I tried not to use gels, which I know is hard in this sport, but, so that was kind of the attempt in that, is I was trying to use water so that I could drink to thirst. So I had, I was just had big hand bottles full of water. Whereas when I was trying to take down as many calories in the liquid form, I kind of felt like I was having too much liquid in there. I'm not a salty sweater at all, so that's never really consideration for me, but, the biggest thing was I wanted water when I was doing Black Canyon.
Yeah. And you just take like the sip of electrolyte and you're just like, damn, like I wish this was water.
I'd used this really, really sweet mix that my friend was making, and it is delicious. But after 4 hours of taking a blue raspberry,
Blue raspberry
is wonderful. Yeah. Blank Sport Nutrition. You should definitely try out the blue raspberry. Freaking delicious.
I don't think I've heard of a blue raspberry, like a hydration or nutrition.
Yeah, it's still 2-to-1 glucose to fructose. So it's still exactly like what Morton and Precision Fuel and Hydration are. But he's adding fun flavors in there.
Yeah.
yeah. And so like, he's got like root beer. He's got, blue raspberry, those are my favorite. He's got tons of different flavors, and it is so awesome. But I had like put a little bit, I had the like mega flavor of it, which is like just extra flavoring, and it just got too much by the end of the time.
Hey everybody, just wanted to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to JohnG.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here.
Just like a sweet bomb at the end. You're just like, oh, this is like very, very sweet. Well, that's cool that you're like tinkering around with like nutrition strategy and like thinking about those things too, which is awesome. And I love what you mentioned, like prep for like OCC, which is like, you know, the premier like 50K like in the world, which is super cool. I'm curious when you think about like you like when you're thinking about the pieces and the elements to be successful at a race like that, like, and you're thinking about like how to implement that in your training, or even like, you know, if an athlete comes to you and just says like, hey, I'd love to train for like a race like OCC, a lot of climbing, a lot of ups, a lot of downs, like, you know, how are you approaching it? And like, how would you suggest like, you know, someone approaches it? And even, you know, from a high level like you, like, cause I know you want to, like you said, perform really well and do those things. Like, What are some things like you're like really honing on, like in the next training block kind of leading up to it?
Yeah. So, I kind of have a couple different training blocks leading into that. So I'm racing Canyons as well. The Canyons 50K.
Oh, nice.
So I kind of race off of specificity of the next race. Winter time is kind of get really fit. And then I start racing towards, or training towards specificity. So actually leading into this next block, I have, some pretty fast running in store. But then once we get ready for OCC directly, it's going to be quite a bit of up and down. And I think that's kind of the best way to do it. I don't think it takes that long, for me to adapt to, running steep stuff. I do pretty well. I think just kind of naturally, like I have pretty strong, quads when it comes to running downhill and stuff. And, uphill has always come pretty easy for me. So leading in, like trying to be the best runner I can be up until Canyons, and then switching gears and start focusing on that, I think that's a good progression for me.
I love that. I love that. And I like the term that you use, like for, you know, your coaching business, aerobic monster. I think that's just like such a cool thing. So like, and I'm sure that plays into like the role of just like you said, getting really fit. So like, I'm curious, like in your own words, like what does it take to like become like an aerobic monster? Like, what does that look like? Like how, if someone like wanted to like say, Eli, like I want to become like an aerobic monster. And like, how do you like turn your, I mean, you are an aerobic monster. I mean, just look at the results you're putting up, but I'm curious, like how do you become one if someone's interested in really getting super fit?
You know, it's so individual for the person. I do believe in training volume. Coming from a triathlete, I do believe in volume, and I do believe in training quite a bit. that's kind of just something that come like aerobic fitness. You can continue getting more and more aerobically fit at up to. I'm going to preface this up to a certain point. More aerobic hours is more generally, up to a point, and then it kind of, you get a point of diminishing returns. And that's saying if you're recovering to, so that you're actually getting those adaptions. So it's kind of finding that point for everybody. And that goes in with life stress, all this other things, say like, and not everybody's going to be a professional athlete where they just have nothing else to do in the day. They're going to have jobs and lives and families. And those all take out of the time that you're able to train. So actually trying to find that balance of how much can I train with this life stress that's going on, I think is kind of the key to becoming an aerobic monster.
I love that you put that caveat of recovery in there too, because I think everyone like always like loves that thing. It's like, oh, volume, and like, and I'm guilty, but it's like, I want to do like so much, but it's like, if you don't have that element of recovery, not just from the running, but like you mentioned, like the life stress, the sleep schedules, like even just like the day-to-day load, if you're like on your feet all day, like in your job, right? Like these are all like things that play factors. So I really love that you have the caveat, and I love it. You talk about like the individualized approach, and it's like, is that the big kind of like thing for you with the individualized approach? Is it like taking into account like the life stress, like the schedule? Is that like where the big individual differences, are there any other things like in terms of, you know, key variables that maybe people need to look at with their training when like really assessing if like they can take on more volume or like they can do speed work or things like that?
Everything's individual. You can have twins and they're going to train differently. Like I love using Tabor and I as the example because we are opposite athletes. So we have to train very different systems. She's coming from that track background and she actually has fast twitch muscle fibers where your boy doesn't. I don't have a fast twitch muscle fiber in my body and it's cool. Like it's fine, but I know that and I have to train accordingly for that. So I change my training for that and we adjust Tabor's training for that as well. Getting her ready for this type of stuff as well.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting thing too. Like, and is it like talk to me a little bit more about it. Like if someone's like, listen, like, yeah, like I'm definitely more of a fast twitch person. Like I can like rip a sprint, like I can rip a mile, like no tomorrow. But when it gets to the longer stuff, that's where I need to put in versus like maybe the person who's like, I can do the long stuff, but I really want to get faster. Like how, like what are the different kind of training and even just maybe even speaking with you and your wife too. And like the kind of differences, like curious to hear like what those applications would look like if a person's listening and they're like, oh, like, I definitely identify with Eli or like Tabor, like how would you kind of approach those differently?
Yeah. So, I mean, especially like, so talking about like Tabor, she has that fast twitch muscle fibers. She has a phenomenal ability to build lactate, which you need for short, fast events. Lactate is a wonderful fuel, is used very well, but, she needs to learn how to use that as a fuel at sub-maximal efforts because she can produce it like crazy, but she can't get rid of it. So a lot of like fast twitch muscle fiber or fast twitch athletes will find that they can produce tons and tons of lactate. They can hurt themselves is what they can do. And so they actually, they need to not go there a little bit. They need to be doing that kind of sub-maximal stuff. So Tabor's sweet spot is that kind of high-end zone two on a five zone model, like that high-end zone two. She loves, or we, she doesn't love it. I love that training zone for her. And then like her, all of her workouts are done like kind of more thresholdy versus actually trying to produce power because we're trying to teach her to use that lactate. Whereas like, say I can't produce lactate. my body uses it. My body loves it, but I can't produce it. So like if I'm getting ready for a short race, I need to be doing pretty intense, pretty fast stuff that is kind of teaching my body to produce lactate. It's kind of one of those, you just have to see what you're training for next. Lactate's awesome because it adapts very quickly to your training. A lot of the other things don't, but it does change pretty rapidly, which is really fun. So yeah, long story short, it's just something that you do have to take into account of what kind of athlete you are when you start individualizing everything.
Yeah, oh man, that was such a good answer. And I really love that you mentioned that too. And like, even at the end, when you're talking about like looking at the race you're training for and then getting your individualized background, it's like such a multifactorial thing. And so I really love how you take that approach because it's not just, you know, here's a training plan for like any 50K, but like, there's just so many different things that you can kind of go into it. So I love that too. And you do a fair bit of cross training too. Like I know I was listening to some other stuff. You know, you were just even saying before recording this podcast, you went out for some skiing, which is cool. Like, and I've heard on podcasts before that you do a lot of biking as well. Talk to me a little bit about like the benefits of that you've kind of seen, just because, you know, I do get questions a lot about it, like cross training and things like that. And it's I think it's becoming a lot more prevalent, especially like in the States, right? Like seeing, you know, the Europeans just going out and ripping these mountain races with like no running and all skiing in the winter. So I guess talk to me about how that plays into your routine.
Yeah. Well, a lot of, for me, it's things I love doing, but it is, kind of that, I can't train for 30 hours running a week. I can train quite a bit, but I can't run that much. And so I see like any kind of cross training, cycling, I don't swim anymore. I've given up on swimming.
You did not like it, or?
I've still not found an urge to go back to the pool yet. I'll just say that. or skiing in the winter, just anything like elliptical, uphill, treadmill, anything. I see that as places that you can add aerobic volume that isn't going to hurt your body. Like if you're injury prone, you can add in a lot of aerobic volume And like I was saying, I fudged through a lot of races by just being aerobically fit. And so if you can be that little bit more aerobically fit, I think you can fudge your way through a lot of things.
So it's just like a matter of like, you basically can bike and like you're adding that fitness, but you're not having that risk of like the over impact or like the musculoskeletal kind of damage that you get like when you're running as much like that. Just because like you said, if you're doing 30 hours a week, it's, you know, you're pounding that like way too hard. Whereas like you can hop an elliptical, a bike, and you're just getting that aerobic benefits. That's correct.
Yeah, exactly. Plus it's a fun thing to change it up. I think, variety is the spice of life. So, spend a little time doing something else. And as much as other coaches hate it, aerobic volume is specific volume. It's an aerobic sport. It's still specific.
Like, you mean like in terms of like the cross training, like you're saying like, hey,
yes,
like
cross training.
Bike. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause a lot of times people say like, don't bike because it's not like specific to the sport, but it's like, hey, like it's still like aerobic training and put it onto there, which is awesome. Oh, you're gonna say something there too, or. Oh, I was curious, like how, you know, you mentioned like kind of like targeting like the uphills and the downhills and stuff like that. And like how you kind of do that is if like, and I mean, you've had to, you know, obviously a triathlon very flat, like in terms for the most part, you got like ups and downs, like relative to trail running, you know, so to say, like, and you mentioned like, you've been like pretty successful at like the uphills, like, is there anything that you would suggest for someone to get better at climbing? Like, let's just say someone's a flatlander or someone is coming from a road background and they're just like, I suck at climbing. Like, is it just a matter of getting aerobically fit, or is there more like specific things that you suggest? Like, curious to hear on that end.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that running is just running. So becoming the best runner you can be will increase your uphill running ability no matter what. And if you say get as fit as you can, and then close to a hilly race or something, if you say hop on an uphill treadmill, getting that neuromuscular stimulus happens very quickly. That's something that, you can just get in a few rounds, and that will do drastic things for how you feel while you're running uphill. Cause that's the biggest thing, is running uphill isn't comfortable. And people just assume it's going to be just as comfortable. It's not, it's awkward. It's weird. and if you don't have access to that, I think going in with a mindset, you do need to know that it's awkward and weird. And like, it doesn't matter how you look going up the hill. It doesn't matter if you hike going up the hill, just get up the hill as quickly as possible. Without going too hard.
Right. 100%. Like keeping in that zone. And I like how you mentioned those things. Cause like, you know, that was a transition that you made too. So, I like it. That thing is like, you know, getting fit is like a very important part. I totally agree with that. I think like fitness is fitness. Like before you even get out, like specificity for anything, like getting fit, even you mentioned in your training, is like, that's what you do. And then you get to the specifics, which is great. And then you get to like that neuromuscular kind of, you know, specificity into going uphill and learning the technique. And I even appreciate how you said like, yeah, it's like awkward at first, because you know, sometimes people get in a hill like, I like, just this feels weird. It's like, yeah, like this is a new motion. So like all good points to kind of hit on there, which is awesome. So dude, I appreciate all the training insight here too. It's like, it's always good to chat with like another coach and like someone who obviously performs at a high level and works with athletes. So that's awesome too. And kind of shifting gears kind of back to kind of like your career and stuff, you mentioned like getting at like the 50K is something that you kind of want to hone in on. It sounds like that's kind of like the distance for you. Is like, how did you kind of come to that conclusion? The reason why I asked this question is because like, you know, for people who are new in the sport, like I always like to suggest to people is like, you know, just try different distances, try different things. And like, you tried many different distances, a lot of sub ultra stuff, 50K, even obviously like, I think triathlon even counts as that too, cause it's like a different kind of thing. Like for 50K, like how do you kind of assess like that, like feeling good for you, feeling right, where it balances not only like what you're good at, but again, like what in like fills up your cup in the end of the day.
Right. Honestly, I think, well, I'll say this. I have not figured that out yet of what exactly athlete I am. And I am going to try something longer. Not positive on what yet. But 50K is definitely what I want to focus on in the short term. I really appreciate it because I love running fast. I love running hard. But you get to do it for a long time. Like 50K is still, it's long. It's very long, but it's also short enough that you can run awkwardly fast for.
Yeah. Are you like ripping like the entire time these 50Ks? Like, are you like, where, if you were to rate like your, like either perceived effort or kind of like zones, like where would you put that?
I was playing with my threshold quite a bit at Big Alta. I'll just say that. Yes. I think Matt Daniels was saying that he was running like 440 pace down the first hill.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was way too fast.
Was he out in front, like, or was he like?
I had made a little awkward gap, like it was like maybe 15 seconds to the top of the first climb. Mm. It wasn't necessarily like a move; it was kind of like see what other people are doing. Like, I start running down the hill, I look back, and the only person like has it in his eyes as like I'm catching you was Matt, and so Matt was flying down. He caught me by the end of the bottom of the first hill, and yeah, I guess he was running like 440s down that hill to catch me.
Oh my gosh, that is crazy. But it's so cool to see, because it's like, it's still like an ultra, like 50K is still like an ultra, but like you are playing with that threshold. Like, it's not just like a 100 miler where it's like so aerobic in there too, which, I mean, you said something longer. Does that like intrigue you? Like, do you like,
are absolutely
intrigued by like 100 mile? Yeah.
Yeah. So my introduction into trail running, just like into the whole scene, everything, my high school cross country coach used to run the Leadville 100 every single year, and he'd bring his varsity team out to pace him. So what? I've paced up and over Hope. I've paced the last 20 miles. And so my intro into trail running, like what I learned what trail running was the Leadville 100.
Oh, wow. So is that the race like you'd want to do as like a first 100, or like, have you thought about that, or?
I'm definitely going to do it in my time. I don't know if it's going to be the first, but we'll see.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm like itching to already see you at like 100 mile distance. I think that'd be super, super cool, which is awesome. See, it's awesome to even get that experience at like, oh man, like sounds like the coolest varsity like coach ever to like
absolutely
have a pace, like one of the greatest 100 milers like in the world, which is super cool. And then as you kind of moved up each distance, like kind of even just thinking about that, like I know like the nutrition was kind of like a big thing as well, but like also there's like a mindset piece. And so talk to me about like the mindset that you kind of have in these races. And I know like in those like, you know, shorter triathlons, it's like, you're just burning. And it's like, you got to like learn how to like hurt real bad. And like, the longer you go, you still have to learn how to hurt, but I feel like it's a different kind of hurt. So
for sure.
What is your, like, what goes through your mind? Like when you're at the Big Alta and you're, you know, playing with thresholds for like 50K and like similar with Black Canyon, like how do you manage that mindset piece? Like, I'm curious, like what goes like through your head when you're in these races?
I think the best part about these races is that everything can go through your head. There's enough time. But one of the greatest things about like the 50K distance, like it is still fast enough and it's clumped enough that there's tactics that go into all this. Mm-hmm. And I love race tactics. So like I was thinking about that so much, like say Big Alta, I didn't really have a whole lot of people to run with at Black Canyon, but everyone was in the 100K that day, the day before. So at Big Alta, like it was awesome having like the Boulder boys there, and awesome having just, there's a ton of guys there. I think Debo called up all his friends like, come to my race, man. But like, yeah, it was so fun. Like I got to spend time thinking like, we get to the top of a hill, like, oh wow, that's beautiful. There's the city right there. I get to see all this beautiful stuff. But then at times it's like, okay, where am I going to make a move? What am I going to do here? How is this person looking? How is this person looking? Like, what am I going to do with my race strategy? What am I going to do with my fueling strategy? Yeah, I think the best thing is you can think about everything in these.
Yeah. And I love what you talk about, like the race tactics and kind of like making it like a chess game. Like, are they, do you like play it like very intuitive, or is it more like planned out, or like, cause I mean, it's, like you said, there's a lot to think about, like nutrition, hydration, like, do you make a move? Do you not make a move? Like course profile? Like, do you like, are you like a chess master out there where it's like, you know, you kind of like know your if then rules, or is it more just intuitive? Just like see how it plays and kind of like play the field as is, like, How do you approach those race tactics?
Ooh, every race is different. It's very much a I've gotten a bad habit of going out like a little awkwardly hard for each race, just to see like what everybody else is doing, like kind of see if I can like get people to race the race and like mess around with that instead of I'm not a huge fan of like the sit and kick races. I don't know if those are things in 50Ks, but like just like the slow start. I think coming from the triathlon background, it's like, I'm itching to go as soon as that gun goes. And I want to go hit it right away. And I know that about myself. So I let it go for like 10, 15 minutes and see like what's going on with everybody in the everybody in the pack. See if there's people that are looking like, oh, they're going to go for it, or they're being smart, they're not being smart. I think it's just kind of a wait and see type of thing. It's a ever evolving chess game.
I like that. I like that. It's like you're drawing the crowd out and then just like reading the field and kind of playing it off, but like you're setting the pace, which like you said, a 50K, it's like that's like the I feel like the strategy to go for, where it's like, I think nowadays, I mean, even like arguably like even 100K is no longer like a, sit and wait kind of game, which is just bananas to say. So that's awesome, man. That's super cool. To kind of like come on the tail end of the conversation, this has been awesome. Like I love, we covered like a wide breadth of topics and things like that. When you think about like your career right now and, you know, all the success you've already had, and I know the success you're going to have in the future, like when you think about like what defines like your career right now, and what I mean by define the career, it's like, what's like the intentionality behind it? Like, what is like your intention? I know like fulfillment's probably like a huge piece of it, but like when you think about like the big goals, like overarching goals, like not just like the race podiums and wins and things like that, like the things that you just want to experience out of it, like what's kind of that intention for you at this point in your career
right now? I mean, it is that fulfillment piece, but it's also just kind of pursuing the best me I can find. I want to become the best athlete I can be. And I think I have a long ways to go with that. I do a lot of things wrong with that. I know that. But it is something that I aspire to, is like, okay, if I start doing this a little bit better and I start doing this a little bit better. So honestly, just the pursuit of excellence is everything for me.
Oh, so good. I love that. I got chills when you said that. That's so good. And is this something that you like actively think about after races? Like, do you do like kind of like an after action kind of assessment, or is it more just like, you know, just mental reflection? Like, do you put pen to paper? Like, how do you kind of like derive lessons from each of your races, so to say?
It's mostly just Tabor and I talking back and forth, and it's kind of fun, like being self-coach. Like we talk about it, like, okay, like if this is a problem, what can we do to adjust that? And we have that opportunity to be like, okay, this is working, this isn't working, this was good, this was bad. And we kind of do that after every race of like, okay, what do we need to do going forward so that does or doesn't happen again?
And I like how you're talking with her too, right? It's not like something that's just like all in here or like just like us, right? It's like good to have, it's good to like voice it out first and foremost, but like to have someone else who also is an extremely talented athlete to kind of like talk and like bounce ideas off of. I feel like that's just super cool. And the fact that you are both, you know, running your coaching organization together and out there, you know, training and, you know, both living that same lifestyle, I can see how like it feeds off and makes it just super, super exciting. So that's awesome, man. Well, Eli, dude, this has been an awesome conversation. I got two quick questions for you too. Like the first is the standard that I always ask all my other guests, but before, I asked my last question here, like where's the best place that people can connect with you on the interwebs and everything, if they're looking to dive into more of Eli's world?
Yeah. So we are, Tabor and I are just starting a YouTube channel. If you're into that. Yes. It's just called The Hemmings. So we actually did a little recap on Big Alta. So you can learn more about it there, kind of watch some, there's some in-race footage and stuff. Our Instagrams are, I think, just there's Eli_Hemming and Tabor's Tabor_Hemming. And then we have a personal website that kind of is attempting to link it all together. I'm very bad at updating it, but it's an attempt, and it's the-hemmings.com.
That's awesome. I love it. The Hemmings. It's like the better version of the Kardashians, even though it's like, I don't know, like, no, you guys are way better than the Kardashians, but like, I like it. It's like falling on the Hemmings and the YouTube channel, like, which is awesome. Like, that's super cool that you're documenting that too. And by the way, anyone, I got all the links to Eli's socials and YouTube channel and everything in the show notes. So follow along. This guy's going to be continuing to make waves in the ultra trail scene and the trail running scene. So I'm super excited to continue to follow along and encourage everyone to do so as well. And Eli, this has been awesome, man. And I got to ask the last question that I ask all my guests on this podcast. And you've already given like a wealth of knowledge when it comes to training, when it comes to mindset, when it comes to fulfillment in life. And so this could be a rehash of maybe something you brought up before, or it can be something different. But since the show is called Everyday Ultra, ethos of our show is helping our listeners be better ultra runners every single day. What can our listeners do to be better ultra runners every single day?
It's about enjoyment, man. You gotta enjoy the process, enjoy it. Like, not every day is like the most fun per se, but it is about enjoying the process and enjoying what we run for fun. Like, it's not necessarily about these end goals. It's about getting out there every day, getting out in the mountains as often as you can. Just enjoy it.
I love that, man. I love that. And even just like, after all, like the training stuff and everything, like the most important thing in the end of the day is enjoying it. And I love it. That circles back to the beginning of the conversation, talking about the moves you made in your career, all around enjoyment. Even when you were talking about the point in your career right now, you even started off saying it's all about fulfillment. Like, I think that is what draws like, you know, a lot of just good energy into the results that you're putting in and the good energy into life. And I think what draws a lot of people over to follow along your journey, man. So super stoked for you to continue to follow your journey over, you know, OCC and to the further and, you know, even that 100-mile distance when you get there as well, man. But congrats on all your current success and your future success. And I'll be rooting for you all along the way, man. So thanks so much for coming on and keep crushing it out there.
Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Yeah, super fun, man. Appreciate you.